My name is Jerry Sell, and I am chair of the Governor's Task Force. By way of information, the Governor's Task Force was formed in April of 1990 and held its first meeting in May of 1990. Purpose of the task force is to gather information about the discrimination, if any, of gays and lesbians within the state of Minnesota. The task force is gathering the information through a series of public hearings which are being held throughout the state of Minnesota, and this is the seventh of those public hearings. We will subsequently go to Bemidji tomorrow for a hearing there. Our intent is to write a written report in which we will make recommendations to the governor, some of which may very well be forwarded to the legislature. The life of the committee is over on the first Monday of January, which is the day before the legislative session begins. So this is a committee that has a definite lifetime. Before we begin the hearings, I would like to point out that all of you should have received a sheet of guidelines for the public hearings when you came in. If you didn't, you can get one from either Pierce or Julie over here, who are with us at the task force. And if anyone would like to speak, please sign in over here and your name will be brought up to me. If you have come with no intention of speaking and decide later on that you would like to speak, please feel free to sign up. We will be here till 4 o'clock, whether there are people here to testify or not. Before we begin taking testimony, I would like each of the task force members to introduce themselves to you. As I said, my name is Jerry Sell. I live in Minneapolis. I'm a mom. I have 6 children. I have been a community activist, chair of my neighborhood group. I have been active in education issues. I spent 24 years as a Minneapolis Public Schools parent, and I currently work in a Minneapolis high school, and I'm also the parent member of the Minneapolis Public Schools AIDS Task Force.
My name is Edward Flavin. I'm a Catholic priest to the Archdiocese of St. Paul, Minneapolis, and a jail chaplain in the Ramsey County Correctional Facilities, which consists of the jail, county jail, and 2 workhouses, one for men and one for women, and a facility for juveniles. I've been a priest for 33 years and have had in that time a number of assignments that pretty well crisscross the work of a Catholic priest in St. Paul, Minneapolis. Parish assignments, seminary teaching, administration of a agency, social action agency for the Archdiocese, and inner city work in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area. On the task force, I chair the subcommittee called Religious Community Subcommittee.
My name is Leo Treadway. I have been on the pastoral staff at St. Paul Reformation Lutheran Church for about the last 10 years. I also serve on the board of directors for the Gay Lesbian Community Action Council, Minneapolis and St. Paul. I'm vice chair for this task force and chair the Committee on Hearings and Briefings. So I'm the one who has been working most directly with your host committee here locally, and I'm pleased to tell you that they've done an excellent job. This is the second time I have been to Moorhead as part of Governor's Task Force. I was here about 2 or 3 years ago when Governor Purpich had appointed a task force on prejudice and violence, and we were looking into the issue of hate crimes. So it is nice to be back to visit you all again, and thank you very much for your hospitality.
Julie?
I'm Pierce Mills. I'm a graduate from Kelsey College, and I'm on the Hearings and Briefings Committee.
Okay. And so before we begin, I would again like to remind anybody who's coming in, if you would like to testify, please sign in. And please try to limit your testimony I have on the sheet 5 minutes, and I sort of made these out as general comments. We probably are not going to have so many people testify that if you go a little over 5 minutes, I'm going to have to cut you off. But I'd ask you please to be brief. I'd also like to remind all of you that the testimony for this part will be taped so that we have this for our record. And also, the committee, the members of the task force who are here may very well have questions for you. So when you have finished testifying, please wait a minute until I find out if anybody has questions. And with that, we'll begin, and the first person is J.D. Peterson.
Good afternoon. Let me begin by saying, I guess, my name and such. My name is J.D. Peterson. I am a student at Morehead State University. I would like to begin by saying that by my being here, I am perceptively exposing myself to potential danger. And I say that not to emphasize myself, but rather to emphasize what gay and lesbians expose themselves to every day merely by being recognized. Our society and culture demonstrates to us from the day we are born that gays and lesbians are the objects of derision, discrimination, and very real physical violence. The tendency is for us to ignore this discrimination and violence because more often than not, it's invisible. Let me reiterate to you, though, that this discrimination and violence we do experience is very real. It is very serious and unfortunately is common. We do not remain invisible by choice, but out of necessity. We like to believe that in this country we all have equal protection under the law. Gay and lesbians do not. Many people choose to believe that we do or remain apathetic, asserting that everyone is protected. This is blatantly untrue, and I can attest to you from my own personal experience. It is quite common, I believe, in this community for gays and lesbians to wonder in a time of crises which side the police would be on. I saw my roommate attacked by a basher across the street from our apartment once. The incident occurred in a parking lot where cruisers frequent. When the police arrived, my roommate was arrested. The basher, as we call them, was not. Because my roommate was gay, he was obviously the cause and totally at fault for the entire incident. On the off chance that similar incidents are handled in even a remotely objective fashion, such complaints are rarely taken seriously. They are slighted or rarely followed through with and disappear through some amazingly legal feat of legerdemain. I have witnessed this happen as well. Gays and lesbians are protected to a minimum extent of the law. To even attempt full protection, oftentimes we must publicly expose ourselves and our identities. In doing so, we must also expose ourselves to public hostility and further acts of bigotry. For example, I worked at a store that I believe discriminated against me based on my sexual orientation. My hours were consistently reduced until I was receiving less than 4 hours a week. There were many conflicting explanations for this, but no proof. Out of necessity, I was forced to quit. The same day that I quit, an ad appeared in the paper. They were advertising for salespeople at 30-plus hours a week. I was unaware of recourse. I certainly could not afford a lawyer. Legal assistance I am aware, has a waiting list of months upon months for handling emergency cases. Whatever action I might have taken would have exposed me to further difficulties at the time as well. I am currently a college student attending at Morehead State University. Previously, I attended at Concordia College, where my existence as a gay man was publicly and repeatedly denied. I personally know of 20 other students who officially did not exist as well. Despite our contributions to the public image of this college through our excellence in journalism, forensic theater, and many other activities, we did not exist. I am now of the opinion that if we did not officially exist, then neither should have our fees and tuition. I would like to see many changes that I believe are justified as basic human rights. Gays and lesbians are a minority group that, much like other groups, should be targeted for protection. There should be human rights ordinances in every city, and the languages of these ordinances absolutely must be inclusive and specific. Otherwise, I believe we will only be paid lip service. I would like to see an official and permanent gay and lesbian task force to investigate the growing rash of hate crimes and discrimination. I believe that the task force should also advocate for us in cases of hate crimes and discrimination in an official capacity so that we will not be denied, ignored, or slighted by the law. State universities, I believe, should be required to implement an official, and most importantly of all, a public policy to protect minority groups such as gays and lesbians. Failure to enforce such a policy adequately should result in economic retribution. I believe an official and public policy is warranted as opposed to a general and vague policy, which is what we have now. A specific and public policy would help to assure gay and lesbian students that their rights will fully and in good faith be protected. This is not happening now. In conclusion, I understand that Morehead has recently adopted a human rights ordinance. There was a great deal of opposition to including gays and lesbians under this ordinance. I have also come to understand that the commission to oversee this ordinance is stacked with those very same people opposed to including gays and lesbians. Most notably is Maury Lanning, Morehead's own mayor and dean of Concordia College. Accusations have been made that he and others on the commission are extremely homophobic, as opposed to just being mildly homophobic. I am inclined to believe these accusations. Many gays and lesbians are unresolved as to whether this ordinance will truly protect our rights. I fully expect that the degree to which our rights will be protected is minimal. A favorite expression of mine is as follows: if it's not almost one, then it's damn near zero. Thank you.
Thank you. Before the committee asks questions, I would just like to interject here for the benefit of the audience that in Minnesota, Chapter 363 is the human rights law. However, sexual preference is not a part of that law in the state of Minnesota. For every other reason, one is protected under the law on the basis of religion, gender, disability, marital status, and so on, but not for sexual preference. So at this time in the state of Minnesota, if you live in a community which does not have a local civil rights ordinance, human rights ordinance, which includes gays and lesbians, then any gay or lesbian person can be kicked out of an apartment or denied a job or refused service in a restaurant or denied medical care or anything else just because a person is gay or lesbian and there is no recourse. So unless you live in a city where you have a local human rights ordinance, gay and lesbian persons are not protected. I do have a question for you, however, and that is there a difference between being an MSU student and being a Concordia student and how you're treated or how you're perceived or how you're recognized?
Yes, it's significantly different. I currently go to Morehead State University, and I am one of the co-chairpersons for the 10% Society, which is a tri-college gay and lesbian advocacy and support group. We do have some amount of recognition at that institution and a certain amount of activities that we do participate in, and etc. At Concordia, we simply did not exist. There were several statements made that there are no gay and lesbian students on the campus, which I know is blatantly untrue. The 10% Society was not allowed to advertise. They were not allowed to circulate flyers. They were not allowed to put ads in the newspapers for meetings or such. It absolutely did not exist. It was completely censored.
In terms of the university itself, are there faculty members, for instance, that students can go to who are advocates or who are willing to be advisors, or do you find that prejudice against gay and lesbian students exists on the faculty level, like, for instance, your notices are torn down for meetings or stuff like that?
In reference to which institution?
At Morehead.
At Morehead State University. Mm-hmm. We have an excellent counseling department at Morehead State University, and there are, I believe, several people who are willing to serve in a capacity to advocate for gay and lesbian students.
Thank you. Other questions? Bill? Or Ed? Sorry.
J.D., did the incident that you described involving your roommate happen in Morehead?
No, it did not. It happened in Fargo.
Did either of you take it to the police?
Yes, he did. No police were initially called at all until he called the police and he was arrested.
Could you amplify a bit what happened with that reporting and any subsequent investigation?
He was eventually released because they believed that he was the perpetrator of the attack. which was not true, the real perpetrator of the attack did not come forward to press charges, therefore they could not hold him. No one was there to file charges against him. Eventually they had to release him. However, in the interim, he got arrested for being beaten up, and he was thrown in jail for a day.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
J.D., you referred to a public policy that protects and supports gay and lesbian people. Was that at Morehead State, or is that for the municipality?
That is for this. If I understand you correctly, I believe I was talking about the Morehead City Ordinance.
The city ordinance. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, the next person, Lou Sear.
My name is Lou Sear, C-Y-R. I'm a resident of Fargo. I attend school at NDSU, and I am a member of the 10% Society. I do a lot of public speaking within the Fargo-Moorhead area. And I have personally, both on both sides of the river, have been harassed, accosted, made fun of, discriminated against. Back in 1986 and 87, when I was doing a lot of public speaking with my partner over at Morehead State, we had people following us after we left the campus. We were scared, and we wouldn't go home. We'd cross the river to go back home, and we would drive around trying to lose these people. That happened at least 5 times. My partner was also accosted by people coming up to her and physically grabbing her between the legs and around the breast area and making rude comments about her sexuality. Last year, last spring, after speaking publicly over at Morehead State University about the incidences that had happened to the social work department, where one student was beaten, and a teacher and another student were threatened, members of the 10% Society went over there to address the issue in a public format. That night, or early the next morning, my car was vandalized in front of my apartment. There was a bullet hole in the back window. Also, in serving as a member of the 10% Society, I take numerous phone calls for people interested in getting information from the group. I have a copy from my phone machine, attesting to a lot of the harassment that tends to go on. And it's very blatant. The comments are very rude, so I'll warn you ahead of time. Somewhere. Oh, okay. It's not there yet. Yes, I just checked the date before I came. Where is it? Before I left. These phone calls went on for an entire month. And then again, they picked up in the spring. They began last October and November. And they repeated, they started up again in April of this past spring. Many of them made references to, I should be dead. Our group should be nuked. They should send nuclear warheads to my house. Made references to, I'm the cause of AIDS, and therefore I should die. God was going to send me to hell. My life was threatened many times on these tapes, telling me that if they ever caught me in public or found out who I was, they would kill me or beat me. And since it's not coming up... Oh, it would help if I turn the tape on instead of the radio.
Would you like to play with that and then come back and play it for us after?
Thank you.
If that's okay.
Any questions?
Are there any questions about?
I have a question, Lou. You're a citizen of Fargo.
Mm-hmm.
Does North Dakota have bias crime statutes?
As far as I know, not for gays and lesbians. My partner a few years ago was working with the Fargo Forum as on a part-time basis, and when her manager or supervisor found out that she was a lesbian, she was fired. And we called the state's attorney, I believe it was, to ask him if there was anything we could do, and he pretty much said, no, we can legally discriminate against you, and offered us absolutely no help whatsoever. I myself plan to attend, I'm originally from Minnesota and I would like to move back to Minnesota. I plan to attend the University of Minnesota, hopefully within the next couple of years as a graduate student. And it'd be nice to know that there are some laws on the books saying that I've got some rights and that I will be protected while being there.
If I could pursue the hate crimes piece of it for just a moment. The testimony that you gave, if I understand correctly, you had spoken at MSU or you had spoken in Moorhead as opposed to Fargo, and the people that followed you from Moorhead
into Fargo.
So there is at least reasonable reason to believe that the perpetrators of this were in some way associated with Moorhead as opposed to Fargo.
That's what I've been led to believe.
Did you report that to the Moorhead police, and if so, what kind of response did you receive there?
I didn't report it to the Moorhead police. The incidents happened, particularly my car last year, or this past spring, happened right on a busy street on Broadway. And I went to the police station the next morning. I didn't even get an officer to come out and look at my car. He just took a statement and let it go at that.
He treated this as a simple vandalism.
Well, I asked him, he asked me if there was any other vehicles in the area that had been vandalized, and he said no. And he says, chances are if this was just some random people going about creating vandalism, there would have been more damage in the area. This looked isolated.
And this was a member of the Moorhead or the Fargo?
The Fargo.
Fargo.
And that was then reported to the Moorhead police. They were working together on trying to discover who was attacking the social work department as well as the students from Moorhead State last year.
I understand the complication of cities that are separated by state boundaries and that sort of thing, as well as different municipal jurisdictions. Do you feel that the Moorhead police gave you the kind of professional response to which you were entitled?
I believe the Moorhead police have been more responsive than what the Fargo police have. But I also know of incidences of a friend who does work with the Moorhead police, and when they discovered she was a lesbian, they harassed her. She worked in a detox unit here in Moorhead, and some of the security officers who are at the gay and lesbian dances that we hold over in Moorhead saw her there. They harassed her the next day at work. And so just, if it's just certain people or if it's kind of the attitude of the department, I'm not really sure. But I know there are certain individuals who definitely do need to be educated within the Moorhead Police Department as well.
I understand some matter of complexity in all this. It does seem to me, however, that for the municipal police of the city of Moorhead, what they were asked to investigate clearly could have been, at least presumed to have been, a bias-motivated crime, and there are state statutes that cover that. It might perhaps be of use for the 10% society to inquire as to how the local municipal police force in Moorhead has responded to those statutes. There are two which are very clear about what is to happen in situations like that, the nature of training for recertification of law enforcement officers and that sort of thing. And sounds as though part of what you may have experienced there, the human rights issue aside, since there's not a statute for that, may have been related to lack of training or lack of understanding of exactly what they were looking at in terms of your complaint.
I was hoping to get contacted by the Moorhead police on the matter of my car being vandalized, but no one did approach me from the Moorhead Police Department.
In those situations, I think one always has recourse to the state's attorney general.
Did you have any questions?
I invite you to bring the tape back, and
if
you can find it and get it going.
Thank you. Thank
I'm
you.
Glad somebody else has difficulty with technical stuff as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you. For those people who have come in since we've begun, I would just like to say that if anybody would like to testify and has not signed up, you can come up to the front table here and sign in on our blue sheet like this. The testimony is being taped for the public part of the hearing. I also would like to tell you that at the bottom of the sheet that you received, the guidelines, we have the address and phone number of the Human Rights Department. If there is anyone here that would like to offer written testimony or who would simply like to call and speak to one of us, you can send written things to the department, or you can leave a message at this toll-free number for me, and I will return your call. So it is not necessary for you to testify publicly, and we have received written testimony in every city that we have been at so far. We have received written testimony. All right, the next person is Rebecca Gardner.
Hello, my name is Rebecca Gardner. I'm a student at Moorhead State, and I am here talking today because I am lesbian and living in Moorhead. I felt really ambivalent about coming here today because, primarily because of the safety issues. As you've heard Lou and JD talk about, it's not real safe to be a lesbian or gay person in Moorhead, particularly with the incidents that happened last spring at Moorhead State. It's pretty scary to identify myself publicly as a lesbian. I don't know, who's listening to this that may hate me simply because of my orientation. And I also felt ambivalent about coming because I recognize that whatever laws the state may implement on my behalf can be taken away. That can change. You know, as with the example of women fighting for the right for choice, we're seeing that right threatened now. And I don't feel a lot of confidence in the state or the federal government. It's hard for me to trust that what I say has an impact. But I do have hope that things could get better, and I feel like I need to make whatever effort I can. I haven't experienced any overt discrimination or violence. but I understand that you are interested in testimony about what lesbians and gays would like to be different in Minnesota. And so I'm going to talk more about that. I thought about what the ideal would be. For me, the ideal would be to go to school and be able to just be out, be who I am, and not be concerned about discrimination. Right now, Morehead State does support the 10% Society, and there is the policy that we cannot be discriminated against based on our orientation. However, I'm not so sure that if some of my professors know that I'm lesbian, that I won't be passed over with information, that I won't get the attention and support in my academic pursuit that someone else might because of their own bias. So I'm really not very trusting that that's very secure. I'm sure that if a professor failed me because I was lesbian, I would have recourse. But the subtle things are still present and harder to take action against. So I would want some freedom at school to be who I am. I wouldn't want to worry about housing. I have various posters and buttons and various things in my apartment that indicate that I'm lesbian. And I worry when my apartment manager or the building owner comes into my apartment. I wonder, are they going to see that? Are they going to notice? Am I going to get thrown out? Are they going to come up with some false reason for evicting me because I'm lesbian? In an ideal situation, that I wouldn't have that fear. Also, in the future, I plan to have children, and I would not want to be concerned about whether people with legal power in Minnesota would be able to take those children away or somehow impact my raising of those children. I want that freedom. I also want lesbian and gay role models. In the atmosphere of fear that exists for us, there aren't very many people who are out. And especially right now, I'm recognizing how much I need that, how much I miss that. I need adults around me who are out. I also want physical safety. I don't want to have to be afraid to hold my lover's hand when I'm walking down the street. Even though I have not experienced physical violence, my peers have. Lesbians and gays have, and I feel just as vulnerable to them, and I know that I am. Ideally, I would like legal recognition of partnership in terms of wills, ownership of houses, insurance benefits, all of those things. When I was thinking about all these things that would exist in my ideal community, I thought, gosh, Beck, you're dreaming. You know, that's just not, it's not going to happen within your lifetime anyway. And I got really angry when I thought about that, because people who are not gay have all those rights. They don't have to worry about being evicted because they're heterosexual, and they don't have to worry about being beaten up because they're heterosexual. They have that freedom. I want that too. This spring I'm going to graduate from Morehead State, and as I think about where I want to take a job, the community is just as important to me as the employer. And I'm looking at communities across the country that are more open to gays and lesbians, that do guarantee gays and lesbians' rights, that protect me as an individual. I hope that Minnesota will continue to work for quality of life for all of its citizens, and I see that happening with education. Not just education about who gays and lesbians are and what we're about, but just education in general is so incredibly important for people to have an understanding of where we came from and how our values came to be what they are. And when we have a better understanding of what our history is, we generally feel more able to make the appropriate changes for the present. And so I would really encourage Minnesota to support its educational system at the elementary level on up through the college level. Do you have any questions?
Thank you. Any questions, Leo?
I have a question. I'd like to follow up on a comment you made about soon graduating and beginning to look for employment and looking for a city that protects gay and lesbian people. I guess I would like to ask sort of a series of related questions. Could you say something in terms of what you think it would mean to this municipality for there to be an exodus of gay and lesbian people of varying skills and professional standing who have to find employment elsewhere in order to feel protected? Could you say something about the loss to the city?
Mm-hmm. That's easy. My friends are buried in their essence. A lot of them are professional, lots are students. You lose economic contributions to the community. You will lose artistic contributions to the community. Registered voters, people who work for social justice in the shelters, in the different social justice agencies. There's a tremendous loss. Because lesbians and gays are discriminated against and we have to fight for our safety, we're often fighting for other people's safety. You know, we're often at the grassroots level of change in many areas. Lesbians were at the very beginning of rape and abuse clinics across the country because we know how essential that safety is. So although we may be invisible to the public because most of us are not out, we have a tremendous impact on our community.
It strikes me as a strange sort of irony. I assume that all those people that you are alluding to are also taxpayers, and that the city loses something in its tax base as well, those taxes going for a variety of benefits and programs and services which are unfortunately denied to gay and lesbian people. I'd like to move on there back to something you said earlier about your desire for physical safety, and you mentioned several times that you had not been victimized in the way that some previous speakers had talked about. Could you say something about the cost that it exacts from you personally to know that that kind of violence would happen if someone identified you as a lesbian woman or thought that you were a lesbian woman, whether you were or not?
You want to know what the cost is of that fear?
Right.
Is that right? It is very costly. I most easily refer back to the incidents at Morehead State last spring, when a student was assaulted simply for writing a paper about lesbians in the Army, and she and her professor were threatened with their lives. I, as a lesbian who was not directly related to the incident, was very scared. I am relatively out in the community. This is the first time that I've made such a public testimony, but I'm relatively out. I go to meetings. I don't keep it a secret. And it would not be difficult for someone to find out that I am lesbian. And I was afraid that I'd come home and find graffiti on my door, that I'd have messages on my machine, that someone would be following me and would attack me. And there's a high price to pay in terms of stress. That's very wearing to always be thinking in the back of your mind, am I safe? To always be wondering, is this person walking down the street the person who assaulted that lesbian? Is this somebody who hates me? Is this someone who is interested in harming me? It's extremely stressful. And especially when things like that are active happening now, it takes my attention away from my schoolwork. That becomes the focus of my life. And I don't want that to be the focus of my life. I have other things to do. I've got, you know, a wonderful life that I want to live, and I don't want to have to worry and invest all of that energy into wondering whether I'm going to be hurt because of who I am.
It seems to me that not only is a loss to you, but that is a loss to the broader society, that if you're not able to fully participate because you feel the need to restrict your activities or where you travel or who you're seen with for fear of your own safety, that is a loss on both fronts.
One follow-up comment to that is that a number of us talked during that time about what we could do to protect ourselves. The police seemed moderately helpful, but we didn't feel sure that we were protected. And some of my friends talked about carrying weapons, carrying guns and knives, and some people talked about carrying baseball bats around just as a visual statement that we're not going to take this. And I decided, I can't do that. I can't invest all of my energy into being on the defensive and protecting myself all the time. I just have to live my life.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rebecca, you've made these allusions to the incident last spring. Is someone that you know of going to be testifying more fully to that?
Yes. I'm sure you'll hear many allusions to that, but there will be more direct testimony.
I think we'd like to hear more specifics. Thank you.
I would like to go back to a comment that you made about education. The key is education. Did you go to a Minnesota high school?
Yes, I did. I went to St. Louis Park High School.
Was there any effort in the high school to, or was anything available in the high school for gay and lesbian students?
Not that I remember. At that time, I wasn't out to myself. I didn't recognize my own sexuality. But, I don't even remember hearing the word lesbian until 11th grade. I didn't even know that they existed. And I learned of it when a friend assured me that I wasn't. She was kind of worried that I wasn't. She assured me that I wasn't. And that was the first time that I even learned lesbians exist. And I did grow up in a fairly sheltered family, so that's part of the reason for that. Mm-hmm. But I do not remember anything in school.
Do you remember books in the library or posters? Anything that would say, you know?
No.
Anything
Mm-mm.
at all?
We did have a class on, I believe it was a health class that covered sexuality in 10th mm-hmm. grade. And I don't remember that it covered gays and lesbians.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Barbara Cromie.
Hi, my name is Barb Cromie. It's C-H-R-O-M-Y. I'm a mother of a six-year-old daughter, and I was just sitting down thinking about how freaky this is to me because this is one thing I worry about. I have several things that I want to cover, and one of them is that I'm always in a state of not knowing what to do about my daughter. I'm very out to her, very open with her. And I let her know that being lesbian or gay is a choice for her, that, you know, she can be whatever she wants to be as far as jobs or who she chooses to love as she grows up. And I've often worried about when she brings children home for overnighters or after school. It's like, should I tell those parents straight out that I am gay, or should I not say anything and let them find out? And what if they go home and what if they see something or find out some way and tell their parents? It's like, is she going to lose friends? Are teachers going to treat her differently if they know that I'm lesbian? And so it's been really hard raising a daughter. Any child would be difficult because I've never known how open to be with her and how much to let her see. And I worry too about, you know, about damaging her psychologically because I've been so brainwashed by growing up. I didn't recognize my lesbianism until I was 23 years old. And so I have a lot of hang-ups myself about it and stereotypes about people. And I'm glad now that I'm growing and learning so much more about the choices people have and just the continuum that people can be on for who they can love and the choices they make in their life. And I'm hoping that my daughter will benefit a great deal from being aware that there are so many differences among people and that she will not grow up to be a person who is discriminating towards other kids or making fun of other kids. So I have a pretty big hopes for her there. I have had one instance of harassment that I would like to talk about. And that was about a year and a half ago. I lived with my lover on the south side of town. And we were being harassed by these two boys. And at the time, we didn't know who it was. And it started out with phone calls, threatening phone calls. And we called the police and had an officer come over. And it had happened so many times that we'd gotten a trace put on our phone. But right after the police officer came to our door, we never received any more phone calls. And then we started getting notes. And our car was vandalized. And the notes alluded to the fact that we were lesbian by mentioning we'll teach you to like boys and something about our hairy legs. And so it was, to us, we knew that it was pointing at our lesbianism. But as far as we knew, the police did not know. And as it turned out, at one point, the boys were down on our lawn playing with some type of martial arts weapon and calling up to our window. And at that point, I called 911. And the police had been over about four or five times before this actual instance of seeing these people calling up to our apartment and making threatening motions and stuff to us. And so I called 911 and the police came over. And through the whole thing, when we were talking to the police and stuff, it was Morehead Police, we were told boys will be boys, it's just the way boys are. And when they were apprehended, we were told they're just kids. And I tried to tell the officer that children do commit crimes, that 15-year-old boys do rape women, that there are awful crimes committed by young people. And I really feel that that instance fell under the hate crime laws. But I didn't know about it at the time. I wasn't aware of the hate crime law that's in Minnesota. And so I don't feel they took it very seriously. In fact, we were never told to make a statement. I called around for some lawyers to find out what I could do to take action against the Morehead Police Department to find out. I felt we were treated so poorly that I had wanted to make some type of... I'm not sure what the word is, complaint, I guess, to the police department. And that's when I was told by a woman lawyer that I should make a statement. And so I went down to the office, to the police office, and asked to make a statement. And they told me, just go home and write it on some notebook paper. And a friend of mine said, no, you have to have the carbon paper that's for taking statements. So I went back to the police officer with a friend that time and asked for the statement forms. And I got the statement forms and I submitted them. And when I turned in my statement and stuff, they pretty much assured me that nothing would happen because the people that they found who were doing it were 15-year-olds, and that they were minors and that there wasn't much they could do. On my statement, I'd written to the county, I think it's the county attorney or whatever, that I felt that crimes against women needed to be taken seriously and that they needed to be punished. At one point, the two police officers brought the two boys who were harassing us and were threatening us to my house and brought them into my house to apologize to me. And I thought, I know of no other crime that the officers would take